late. It's not worth it. Tweet, tweet. Which is funny since, you know, we do Twitter all the time. Hi. Welcome to Love Bite.
Welcome.
How are you?
Me?
No, well, everybody. But you too.
I bet you were talking to me.
We're late.
No, well, kind of ish. Yeah, no,
it's okay. It's okay. I'll live. I'm Insidious Muse.
And I'm Service Slut.
And we have an in studio guest.
Yes. And yes.
Yes. So we have Emily.
Yes.
Pryor. Who is the director for the Center Center for Positive Sexuality. She's actually the sweetie of ProVillain.
Yeah.
If you have noticed him talking about
He talks about his sweetie doing yoga and how, hey, I'll be right back because that.
Now we know. You can see it all.
We share a home office, so. It makes for lots of distractions.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah, that'd be difficult to get anything done. That's hot. A lot of people make requests for topics on our show. And really, one of the biggest we get is poly. People want to talk about poly. And when, you know, we found out, hey, Emily can come on. Let's talk to, you know, an expert and ask her about
the hard-hitting question.
Yeah, about this poly thing. So I'm very happy to have her here and get some information because there's a lot of opinions.
Absolutely.
People that are active in poly, people that hate poly, people that love poly. There's a lot of, I got some comments, DMs from people on the Twitter about their opinions of poly. So it was really interesting to see what people think and that they wouldn't share that publicly. You know what I'm saying?
That is interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a little surprised that someone would actively hate poly.
Oh, no.
You know, it seems like that's like saying you actively hate Santa Claus. I'm like, why
well,
would that
I
matter?
Do.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why would that really matter? Okay.
Yeah, no, I agree. But it is what it is. I mean, maybe people, it's because they don't understand it or they fear it, which seems to be the more rational option for that. But, you know.
Because you're talking about, you know, emotions, love. And I think that for some people, you know, they grow up with this notion of monogamy and how if you meet someone and you fall in love and they fall in love with you and then everything's so rosy and pretty and you get like this white picket fence and then like
and happily ever after.
And then like, yeah. And then tulips and stuff. You forgot the tulips in the front yard.
Yeah. Because I kill all living things. Stuff,
so. So I think. Because people grow up with that, maybe that's why poly's scary.
I guess. I mean, I think on the one hand, I think that whole ideal is myth. That's mythology. Mm-hmm. The idea that you're going to find that one perfect person who suits all of your needs and you're going to live happily ever after with that person. That doesn't happen. I mean, some people find someone that really connects with them and that's who they want to be with, and that's fabulous, but you're never going to be with anyone forever.
Right.
Something will stop that relationship. Could be death, could be an affair, could be a variety of things, but you will not be with anybody forever. And then the idea that any one person can fulfill all of your needs is fiction.
That's also scary.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's,
and geez,
yeah.
what a horrible thing to put on somebody else.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's
I don't want to be responsible for all of the needs of some other person,
right.
All their emotional needs, all of their intimate needs, you know, all of that.
Yeah, their friendship needs, their all of that. I mean, it is. It's intimidating, and it almost sets you up for failure from the very get-go.
Yeah.
So I get that. I mean, I get that. Real quick, let's just kind of define polyamory for those of us who are all on the same page.
Generally, polyamory, the general definition that people seem to be accepting at this time is that this is something where you're engaging in multiple ongoing consenting relationships that include a level of intimacy that probably includes things like love, may or may not include sex.
Okay.
To, you know, sort of textbook definition.
Okay.
It's sort of falls under a larger umbrella of non-monogamy.
Right.
Because you're not necessarily polyamorous with other people, you know, even though you might be in a non-monogamous relationship.
Yeah, no, there's the whore. And then there's the polyamory what?
Right. You know, it's and not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, that's fine. To be a slut.
I not.
That's right.
The not denigrating that in the least. And not even saying that, you know, it's sort of, it's by person. It's a very subjective idea.
Right. Well, I think that relationships are incredibly subjective, and they're
absolutely
about a person's perception and about their history and about, so from, I mean, I can see that. And I think when you enter it into this kind of poly world, it's now you've got like a lot of different perspectives and histories and, you know, kind of everything that goes into it, which to me is, you know, really in enhances the complexity of it all.
Absolutely. And even if we're talking monogamy, it's clear that not everyone has the same definition of monogamy. This is clear. Put two people in a quote-unquote monogamous relationship and ask them each to define that term, and they'll probably define it differently and then look at each other like, is that what you meant? Because that's not what I meant. That's not the relationship I thought I was in. Because some people will say, well, monogamy is you're sexually monogamous, but you still have other types of intimate relationships with other people.
Right.
Some people will say, well, we're sexually monogamous except for oral sex.
Right.
Right? Or that we're intimately, you know, we're intimate with one another, we're sexually monogamous, but we play with other people.
Yeah, that, I mean,
but they're still using the word monogamy,
yeah,
right? That there is this relationship that consists of these two people, and maybe other stuff happens, but they're defining monogamy differently.
Yeah, and who really sits down and has that discussion? You know what I'm saying?
Mature adults.
Yeah, but even
they
then,
absolutely
it's
should.
Still,
they should,
but it's really one of those challenges when you sit down with, you know, your sweetie
whatever
or whatever
potential partner.
Exactly.
Have this conversation.
And I don't think that's on anybody's list. I think because we all have such a clearly defined concept of monogamy or, you know, non-monogamy, whatever it is or isn't. And I frankly never would have thought about kind of that, you know, those non-sexual intimate relationships that you have. But I suppose in a way that is completely a component of non-monogamy, which I hadn't considered.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because certainly you have people in your life that you share levels of intimacy with that may or may not have anything to do with sex, but they clearly fulfill very intimate needs that you have. So, you know, if you're in a monogamous relationship, but you have your best girlfriend or your best boyfriend that you tell all your secrets to, and this is the person who you go to when things are dicey or you're worried about your monogamous relationship or you're worried about things with your family or whatever it is, and you're sharing very intimate secrets and experiences with this person, it's a non-sexual relationship. But it's an intimate relationship. And I think where people start to get weird is when suddenly sex comes into the picture. Suddenly,
right, like we've crossed some strange barrier.
Yeah, we've crossed some strange barrier when clearly you can have sex with someone and not be intimate with them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it happens all the time.
And you can be intimate with someone and not have sex with them.
Absolutely. And, you know, in fact, I mean, looking back at my own personal history, I know that there's definitely times when I have been sexually intimate with someone and I don't care about them, but I've had a greater, so much more intense relationship with, like, say, my girlfriends that were non-sexual.
Yeah.
You know, where that, I mean, they would be fulfilling all of those needs, and then, you know, sex would be for whatever. You know, we're talking college and stuff.
Right.
Kind of things.
But that seems to be fairly natural because almost everyone experiences those types of relationships where you're kind of splitting up your intimacy, splitting up who you have sex with and who you're intimate with, and maybe they overlap. I would argue that's poly.
No, I think that that's you know, a valid argument.
That's what I would argue.
And that's the interesting thing is that, and I think it's the reason why the term is so divisive because, again, almost like you said, monogamy, everybody has their clear definition of what it means and their stamp of approval or their stamp of disapproval or whatever it is, whatever baggage that they have, they're bringing into it and they're defining. I mean, for example, somebody, you know, sent me a message today and said, I don't think poly works. Because you clearly are, you're only gonna love one person more than anybody, so poly doesn't work. And I'm like, well, okay, but there, maybe it doesn't work for you, and maybe because I know people that have their primary relationship mm-hmm. and then they have secondaries and they have tiers and stuff. And obviously their primary is their primary, and that's kind of who they go to for whatever. And then it doesn't mean that they don't have love for the others, but there's, you know, it's a hierarchy.
Right. And what I would even say to that is, you know, the way that I explain it to therapists, to students, is think about having children. If you have more than one child, does that mean you only love each of them 50% or it's a 60-40 or 70-30? No, you love them each 100%, hopefully. You know, hopefully.
If they're being good.
Right. But hopefully you love them each 100%. That's assuming that you have two. And that you love one doesn't mean you don't love the other.
Right.
Right? So why are we now... So we're now assuming that we are now capable of doing this, right? We can do this with our children. We can do this with pets. Yep. You can be a poly pet person, right? You can have three cats and love all three cats.
Yep.
We accept that we can do this. So why can't we do this with everybody else in our life?
Yeah, we do it with friends all the time.
Right.
But I think, again, it's that you cross over into that sexual barrier and it's like everything becomes muddy. All of a sudden, because sex is involved, there's this strange, like you are looked at like some strange pariah, this person. Like, why would you do that? You know, like, because I don't, were we fed by Disney fairy tales too much? Where, I mean, I don't know, by this concept. Did we all read too much Jane Austen? What, I mean, it's just, it's very frustrating, I think.
It is very frustrating. I agree.
And you feel like you're kind of on the defensive. You know, and I used to be one of those people that I looked at poly people and like, it's just an excuse to go sleep with whoever you want. And then, you know, as I matured.
But that's not invalid.
It's whatever. And I don't think I've ever seen any two poly relationships that were the same.
Not at all.
They're all different.
It's so diverse.
Which is fantastic. And again, it boils down to the perspectives and the definitions and the baggage and their history. So they can't be the same. But have you ever seen any two relationships that are the same?
Absolutely.
So, but you know, it's one of those things where as I became more exposed to it and kind of more involved in it, it was like, oh, I get it. Now, one of my flaws is that I have to intellectually understand something. It freaks me the fuck out if I don't. And for the love of all that is holy and decent or unholy and indecent, I couldn't. I got it like emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And I still don't know. I mean, I guess in a way I have a loose paper bag around it intellectually, but it's one of those things because it changes. It's like a bag full of cats. It changes all the time.
Right.
So for me, it's one of those things that was a real challenge for me. Is I was like, because intellectually it didn't make sense.
And I think that's part of what we have to allow is we have to start really opening up our definitions and allow anything that has to do with sex and gender to be very fluid. We have to allow these definitions to adapt to the individuals who are using them to identify themselves. Yeah. So if I'm using the word polyamory to describe my relationship and you're using the word polyamory to describe your relationship, we have to allow one another to have different definitions of that same word. Does it totally freak out scientists and researchers? Absolutely. and good for you. You know, don't make it easy for those social scientists. I'm one. Don't make it easy.
Right.
Because rather than describing these teeny little boxes that everybody should fit perfectly into, let's actually look at that we're allowed to be diverse and allowed to express ourselves in a large array. And there's some overlap. There's some common ground. It doesn't mean we can't, find something that we all find similar with one another. But, you know, we should also be allowed to have our own identities, too.
Would you say that there would be like some sort of a, you know, like there's the Kinsey scale of, you know, homo and heterosexuality. Would you say that there'd be like a poly scale or something, or that is even too defined?
Well, one, my personal problems with the current idea of using the Kinsey scale is it's this line where you're at opposite ends. And I personally would say that homosexuality and heterosexuality are not opposites of one another, because really there's only one difference between those two things. And a whole lot of similarities.
Right. That's valid.
Right?
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of similarities between those two things. And only one difference. And even that difference starts to get blurry.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? That difference starts to get blurry when we start accepting that sex is not a binary system. So I think it's more of this real wavy, strange, circle-y kind of a thing. I don't know. I'm trying to still work out what that picture looks like. Yeah. I think it needs to be something three-dimensional, to be quite honest, to make it clear as to how people fit into this, because it's not just a straight line from one end to the other. But I think in a similar fashion, monogamy and polyamory is sort of this amorphous, you're taking bits and pieces of what works for you. I'm in a primary relationship. We consider ourselves poly, but we have a primary relationship. And for us, what that means is that primary relationship is we share a house together, we share bills, we share a kid. You know, we share things that we don't share with others. Mm-hmm. But what we don't share does not end up being sex, intimacy, personal relationships. What we don't share ends up being some rather mundane money and mortgage and paying a college tuition, you know?
Yeah.
This kind of stuff. I'm not sharing that with other people, although that might make it a hell of a lot easier.
That'd be kind of nice, actually. Think about it.
But in the way that our stuff works currently, we don't have anyone else living with us. We're in our own household. But we have this larger extended family, poly family, where there are different levels of intimacies, may or may not have sex included. So it's, yeah, one could say, no, it's really a monogamous relationship, but that's not what we're saying. So no, it isn't.
Okay. Because, you know, I also try to intellectualize it. And I think, how can you negotiate something like this? You know, what do you do when you have the one partner that's wants to do poly, that is just what they want to do, and the other partner is not quite there. They want to dip in their toe, but they're not sure.
You know, whether it's poly, whether it's a new kinky sex thing that they want to do, whether it's repainting the bedroom, it can be that mundane. I think it has to rely on communication. It has to rely on being honest with each other. It has to rely on really allowing one another to have a voice in what happens to that relationship. Because if one person decides, you know what, I'm going to repaint the bedroom green and I'm going to surprise my partner by repainting the bedroom green, even though we've never talked about this, that person's probably not going to be real thrilled when they come home and suddenly the bedroom is repainted, unless you happen to know that that is their absolute favorite color and they've been wanting this for ages and ages and you just haven't talked about it in a long time. Even still, it wouldn't be a bad idea to consult somebody. You know, if you've been in a monogamous relationship for whatever amount of time and now you're starting to think, well, no, I'm poly and I want to explore poly, you should talk about that. You should really talk about what that means and why. What else is going on? Why do you want to explore this? Because maybe we are just happening, you know, that person's hitting that place in their life where they're starting to figure out who they are sexually. Or maybe there's something going on in the relationship that rather than deal with what's going on in the relationship, they're now deciding, let's add this other complicated layer and that'll make things better.
Yeah.
Because people do that all the time by saying, the relationship sucks. Let's have a kid. Yeah. So people do this, right? We're not always rational beings. Rarely rational beings, really.
No.
But if you want it to work, it doesn't mean it can't work, but you have to communicate and everybody has to be honest. And I think that's where it starts to fall apart, is that people don't want to be honest.
Is it that they don't want to be honest, or they're not really sure about... Some can't express and some haven't really tapped in to figure out, and so they generally, the gut reaction is out of fear.
Absolutely. And you have to allow for that. You know, your gut reaction is your reaction, and for you to go, why would I do that? That sounds like cheating. I don't want to, you know, whatever that reaction is, have it, own it, allow yourself to have that fear, allow yourself, and your partner needs to allow that to happen. Just like if you're poly, it doesn't mean you never get jealous.
And I think that's the belief. Is that, well, if you're poly, then you don't get jealous.
Oh, absolutely not. Of course you get jealous. It's a very human emotion.
Right. Because they say jealousy is a sign of a flawed relationship. And I'm like, well, then I'm screwed.
Oh, then everyone's relationship is flawed. Because don't tell me that people in monogamous relationships don't get jealous.
True.
I see more people in monogamous relationships playing stupid games based on jealousy than I see poly people doing, to be quite honest.
Yeah, and I think it, because having that open dialogue, I think
it changes that game. It changes that game. I can say, you know what? Today I'm in that space where I need all the attention to be on me because of whatever else is going on in my life, biologically, whatever. I need all the attention. So I need you not to tell me how hot every woman is that you pass by today. Please.
Please.
Don't. And if you're in a good relationship with someone, they can respond with, oh, I understand. I'm sorry you're in that space. I will honor that. And then let's get back to this later when you're not feeling vulnerable and find out what triggered that.
Yeah.
What's going on with you? Right? And so if you're willing to have those dialogues, then yes, you can have a poly relationship.
Yeah.
That's a lot to put on the line.
It's a lot. You have to be making yourself very emotionally vulnerable.
I think, you know, but
that's I think it's worth it.
They're supposed to, you know, I mean, but shouldn't you be having those kinds of discussions?
You should have them even if you're monogamous.
Right, in a monogamous relationship.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, that's, to me, that's what, you know.
That's what a relationship is.
Whenever I've had, like, the failure of a relationship, it's always been because, for whatever reason, maybe there was fear or that stopped one of those kinds of intimate discussions from happening. And then it just erodes from that point on.
One, I have a curveball because.
Please.
But how do you, how. I think about poly, and this is the discussion that we're having right now. And I don't know how all of that translates into a power exchange relationship. Because that seems a little bit more. That seems more complicated. That kind of negotiation seems a little bit more complicated.
I don't know. I think it's the same negotiation. Because certainly if you're negotiating a power exchange relationship, let's just say just power exchange, we're not concerning ourselves with monogamy, polyamory, blah, blah, blah. We're deciding that we're going to be in some sort of power exchange relationship with one another. In that is this for the next 20 minutes, right? Are we just play partners and we met at a party and we're going to have a power exchange for 20 minutes? Is this a long-term relationship? Is this, what are we doing with this, right? All of that discussion has to happen. And if you then are adding in the layers of poly, it's funny. It's really difficult to, when I try to find groups locally who are poly groups, I have a hard time finding ones that are poly groups and not SM, Power Exchange, DS.
Really?
MS groups. And when I try to say, no, I would like to talk about poly outside of SM, they look at me like I'm weird. Like that can't happen.
Wow.
Or that, oh, well, that's a swinger. No, it's not a swinger. that's a different category.
Yeah.
You know, so it's weird. People will do this thing. And when I say, yeah, I'm poly and I'm in an SM relationship, but not an MS or DS relationship, master-slave or dominant-submissive relationship, they give me this weird cross-eyed look like, I don't know what you just said to me.
Yeah. Well, I could see how that would confuse somebody.
Like, sorry, this is who I am. I agree that it makes it more complicated, that if you're adding in power exchange with a poly relationship, certainly not impossible, but that has to be negotiated.
Right.
Are you the kind of person who can handle your partner having multiple relationships, even though you have this particular power exchange going on, mm-hmm. or that you can have multiple relationships, even though this dynamic is happening?
And I think that's the big question, and I think that's what I know a lot of people I've spoken with struggle with, is whether they are capable, able, you know, and a lot of times the answer immediately is no. And then, you know, if they think that they are and there's some failures, then it's, oh, I knew it. You know, it's just one of those things. How, you know, what advice would you give for somebody who's, this is mulling around in them?
You know, I mean, there are certainly places to go to some extent. There seem to be more a few more online spaces and real life spaces that talk about poly and deal with poly, because there's a couple of events that happen. Not nearly as big that I've found as the SM leather kink communities around, quite honest.
Like, I think there's poly discussion groups locally at one of the dungeons and mm-hmm. stuff. But again, it's at usually, a dungeon.
It's usually around DS and MS right. relationships. So it can be difficult to find that, I think, as a community. There doesn't seem to be a poly community that I have been able to really find. Mm-hmm. And I assume they exist somewhere. I hope they exist somewhere. I have not found them locally. But I think if this is sort of knocking around your head and this is something that you think you want to do, my advice first off, read The Ethical Slut.
Okay.
Read The Ethical Slut. You know, and personally, if you want to have any relationship, read The Ethical Slut. I think this should be required reading for anyone having a relationship, poly or monogamous.
Why?
Because what it tells you is how to communicate with someone honestly. And how important it is to communicate honestly about who you are, what you are, where you are right now, and where you'd like to be. Everybody's going to get mad at me for this, but I gave my daughter this book when she was a teenager. Because teens have multiple ongoing relationships, which they should. They're dating.
Right, absolutely.
And honestly, this should not stop just because you've turned 18 or 19. As far as I'm concerned, you know, you should be testing people out. That's what dating is about.
Yep.
And it always scares me when I see somebody, oh, I've started dating them and now we're a couple and you've had 3 dates. Really? Just do a few more test drives. test it out. But, you know, I gave her my copy of the book and I never got it back. I had to buy a new one because she would never give it back to me.
Aww. It's a little dog-eared.
Oh, my God. It went with her to college. And, you know, she told me, she was like, oh, my God, this is what's in my head.
Wow.
This was what was in my head. Now I feel okay about dating several people. And I said, it's all about honesty. It's okay for you to date several people. Just let them all know that that's what's going on.
Right.
You can avoid so many arguments, so many hurt feelings, if you're willing to do that. And she's made it very clear to me. She's made it very clear to her partners that she is poly.
That's very advanced.
Yeah. Very advanced. Very, very advanced. And I'm thinking, geez, I wish I had figured that out at that age. My God, I could have avoided a lot of bad things.
Yeah.
But to be able to just be that honest and to, you know, say, look, here's where I am. This is what's going to happen. If this doesn't work for you, let's not even start this relationship. Let's not go down this road. Avoid some heartache. I'm not going to lie. And she's had some great relationships.
I think there's definitely that fear of rejection, though.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, yeah,
absolutely. But geez, do you really want to be with someone who doesn't want the relationship that you want? You know,
well,
if you're going to be rejected by them, I'd rather be rejected by them from the first day that I meet them rather than 5 years down the road after we've spent all this time together.
Yeah. Well, and I think that fear of rejection is there anytime you have one of these kind of like serious relationship talks. There's always
absolutely.
That's always there. You know. And it's always difficult for both sides.
Absolutely.
You know, and for various reasons, whether what you're saying, you fear that they will, you know, judge you inappropriately or appropriately, whatever. additionally, from sometimes just being really aware of it in your own head. And mm-hmm. we come up with shit and it's like, oh, this is this in your head. And you're like, well, you know, maybe a year later, you're like, what the fuck was I thinking? You know, because...
Right.
We're just trying to be our own therapist, for lack of a better term, and we're not always the best with ourselves.
True.
We might be a little
skewed. We're very judgmental. Yeah. And one of my favorite people taught me the phrase that pretty much everything that has to do with who you are should get followed with the phrase at this time.
Yeah.
This is who you are at this time. Allow for yourself to adapt and change and grow.
That's true.
And that should really apply to whether it's, I don't like Indian food at this time. Allow the possibility that maybe someday you will like Indian food.
I don't like spicy food at this time.
Right, you know. Or whether it's, I'm in a monogamous place at this time. This is where I am right now. Because you might change.
Yeah. Well, you hope.
And whatever
I
that
hope
is.
People change, you know.
That's You hope.
It's part of
what's supposed to happen. Right. You're supposed to adapt and change and grow.
For anyone who is listening and has questions that they would like answered, or comments even, our phone number is 800-893-9562. 800-893-9562. You can also tweet us. That also works. Just in case anybody's...
Fabulous.
That's right. They have questions. Comments, anything. I have friends, and they have real issues with Polly. They really do. They, having seen different kinds of Polly, I think that it's easier to just put a label on all of it, and mm-hmm. it's all this. This is a sticker. Put it in the box, and that's what it is. And based upon that, you know, there's a very negative opinion for these people. Of Polly and what it is. And as soon as somebody claims themselves to be Polly, you know, they go, you're one of those.
Yeah.
You know, and the challenge, I think, is how do you educate these people? Unless, I mean, they've already just made their judgment, and sometimes people just, that's it.
But if they've made their judgment, then they made their judgment. They're free to believe that.
Absolutely.
And that's fine. And I think part of that has to, you know, what was their experience? What brought them to that conclusion that that's what it is or what it isn't or whatever?
I think it was just for a particular friend of mine, it was just watching a couple people have separate people have poly relationships that it looked like they were putting the poly sticker on it to legitimize, you know, just screwing around because maybe they weren't totally honest all the time with their partners and stuff. So, and I can understand that, because that to me, and what her and I discussions were, it's like, well, technically, I mean, that's not technically poly. I guess it is, but you know, it's not good poly.
Right. No, it's not good poly. It's very bad poly.
Yeah. So let's make that distinction. What is good poly versus bad poly?
Well, you know, and again, those are such weighted words, but
what, good and bad?
Yeah.
Okay, wait. Let me rephrase that. What's the poly that what works and what doesn't?
What doesn't work is dishonesty. What works is honesty. That's it. And I don't care what kind of relationship you want to use and what kind of label you want to use. If you're having a monogamous relationship and you're not being honest with your partner, it will fail.
With an affair.
It will fail. In some way, it will fail. Now, let's be clear. Not everyone is prepared to be honest.
Yeah.
Not everyone is at a place where they can actually be honest about themselves, with themselves, much less anyone else.
Absolutely.
I was actually in a monogamous marriage, 7 years, sucked royally. not everything about it, but it was clear this was not the relationship I should be in for so many reasons. And part of it was monogamy. And part of it was every attempt I made to be honest with my partner in that relationship, I was shut down.
Really?
It was made very clear to me that that's not what he wanted to hear, that this was not who he wanted me to be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah,
and so
I've been there.
What you do, what some people do, what I did was, oh, well, I guess that's not how I should be. I guess I'll try this.
Yeah.
And you test out the waters in this area. Oh, so this is how you're defining wife, mother, whatever role you've put me in. Oh, okay, so this is how I'm supposed to behave in that role so that you are happy, so that this works for at least a temporary period of time. Of course, in doing that, now I'm not being who I am.
Yeah. Right? I mean, it's doomed at that point.
Right, it's doomed.
For sure.
It's doomed. This will eventually explode, which it did. Will eventually create horrible things, which it did. But out of that... came, at least for me, was this strength of, wow, screw that. I'm never doing that again.
Yeah.
And if you don't like who I am, and if when we meet, we say, here's the parameters to this kind of relationship. Here's what I'm okay with. Here's what I'm not okay with. Here's how it's going to go. Take it or leave it. It was amazing how few screwed up relationships I had after that point, when I was willing to just say, here's the cards on the table, take it or leave it. And when I had those few people who decided to engage in that relationship with me, and then 2 months, 3 months, 6 months down the road said, oh, now that we've been together, now we're going to be monogamous, and you're going to not see all these other people, and you're just going to be with me. And I said, no, when we started this relationship, you agreed to this. And if you've decided this doesn't work for you anymore, that's fine. You're going to go. I'm not stopping who I am. You can leave. So, not everybody can do that.
Yeah.
But I think that's what it takes. Even if it's a monogamous relationship, I think it takes, if you know this is who you are and this is what you want, then be very clear about that.
So, like for that kind of situation, sometimes that can be very difficult, you know, when a person has those emotions and they feel drawn towards someone. And it sounds like, you know, you just have to have a really good kind of northern star to make sure that you're consistently not necessarily having that talk, because that'd be weird. Let's have a monthly chat about our relationship status or whatever, but I'm just saying.
Wait, let me stop you right there. Would it be bad, though, to have
a scheduled
scheduled conversation?
In my current relationship.
Scheduled?
In my current villainous relationship. And it's not that we schedule, okay, every fourth Sunday, this is what we're going to talk about, but it's daily. It's all the time. We're always negotiating. We're always talking about our relationship. We're always, you know, it's like, okay, I'm going away for the weekend, and should I meet someone, what are you okay with?
Right. No, I think that that's how you kind of are constantly negotiating when you're in a relationship. But it's that whole, like for that, clearly that person was not being honest for the 2, 3, 6 months. They were just biding their time.
Right. They're hoping, if I can make myself look really amazing, yeah, she'll change who she is to be with me. And I'm like, yeah, I did that. Didn't work. Sorry. We're moving on.
Yeah. And I think that's that's a big fear of people that want to engage in poly. And so, you know, what are some ways to help kind of avoid that? I mean, if you can't make somebody be honest if they're not going to be honest, but maybe you can pick up red flags.
It's so hard. Because some people are really good at not being honest. You know, you just don't know. You just don't know.
No, they don't. They're not honest with themselves. So they believe they're being very honest.
They believe they're being very honest.
Absolutely.
And so that's the most difficult to deal with, because how would you know?
Yeah.
They don't even know. And I think that's very difficult. I think when it comes to, I think this is something that the various spectrum of SM relationships can really give to others, is that structured talk. Is that, you know, because whether it's you're going to play with somebody at a party or you're going to engage in some sort of SM relationship, you actually sit and have that talk of, here are the things that I need. Mm. Here are the things that I expect from you. Here are the things that I expect from you, right? You make this list and you match it up and you see, are we actually compatible on these levels? And it's not just sex, is it?
Right.
It's sex. It's housekeeping. It's who makes money and who's in charge of what. It's who, you know, it's all of this stuff that gets negotiated out that other non-SM people really need to learn how to do. Really need to learn it.
Yeah, that's a very difficult thing to try and be that kind of honest on all of those things. Because, you know, at some level, we're all raised with something, and any number of those things was taboo to talk about at home.
Absolutely.
You know, if not all of them.
Right. Absolutely. But it's so important. You know, I mean, how much easier is it for you to know, I'm the one that's supposed to take out the trash on Wednesday? You know, if you know that that is your job, that could be fairly easy. Now, of course, the complications come in when you've been told or tasked with, well, this is your thing, and then you don't do it, and then what happens, and, you know, all of that kind of stuff comes in. Although, again, SM relationships, I think, have unique ways of dealing with that.
That's true.
Other relationships don't.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and again, I think other types of relationships could benefit from those checks and balances, as they were, that come up, because, you know, there is a system of discipline, of rewards and punishment based on some of these things sometimes, right?
Oh, yeah.
And even with us, I mean, we're in a very egalitarian relationship.
Right. That's the, I mean, in a, like an SM kind of relationship, yeah. there's obviously, there's
that disequilibrium. Power
dynamic. So that makes it so it's easier. Who's the one who's directing things? But when right. you are in an egalitarian, which, you know, a lot of people want, yeah. how do you deal with those kinds of
when
things?
When we're in, you know, for us, we're in a very egalitarian relationship. We're actually both fairly dominant personalities. But that doesn't mean we don't let our submissive sides occasionally, you know, and sure. and so we try to balance with one another. So that again comes up with, we have to be honest. So if I'm in a place where, you know what, I have XYZ to do, and that means I can't do ABC. So I need you to take up the slack on ABC because I can't right now. And so in that relationship, we need to be willing to fluctuate back and forth and be willing to keep up with each other. You know, I mean, we're like constantly like, okay, what's your schedule and what's my schedule? Because our schedules are so flexible and change very frequently. Okay, so if that's your schedule and this is my schedule, okay, who's cooking dinner? Who's doing this? Who's doing that? Because we don't have this DS dynamic that says, you do these things, I do these things. We have this dynamic that says, okay, depending on circumstances,
yeah.
you will do these things and I will do
which
these things,
I think
things
is,
or vice
is
versa.
Pretty normal for most kind of standard vanilla
right.
relationships.
But most people don't discuss it.
No.
They just assume so-and-so is going to do this and the other one's going to do that.
Right. You take the trash out because that's what dad did.
Right. And that's where problems start to arise yeah. because now you're being taken for granted as opposed to, oh, you did the dishes, honey. Thank you. I know you didn't have to do that, but I appreciate that you did that for me because I didn't have the time.
Right. Which, by the way, should be present regardless, in my
Absolutely.
Opinion.
Absolutely. And even if it is the person who's supposed to do it, that's your job. Your job is to do the dishes every night. There's nothing wrong with getting praise for that.
Right. I thank you whenever you clean my house. And I don't have to.
You know.
I think I have to.
You have to appreciate the person who's willing to help you.
Right. I agree. Well, I think that it's about valuing the partner, even if it's just the partner in the moment, if it's the partner, you know, that's a partner at that time. And you have to
Absolutely.
Value them. You both have to value the other. As soon as you lose that value, I think it just starts to fall apart.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
For whatever reason. And it's always the little things.
Yeah. It is the little things. And that's one of the things we talked about, you know, my sweetie and I, we talked about early on in our relationship, it's like, okay, let's not have the fight over the toothpaste cap because that's just stupid, right? Why don't you put the cap back on the toothpaste? Why aren't you doing that? Because that's not the fight, right? It's all this other stupid stuff that happened before then. So rather than get to that point where we're exploding over the toothpaste cap, when that thing happens that is mildly irritating, you're not mad yet, but you know eventually that will piss you off.
Yeah.
Whatever that is, it's leaving the sponge in the sink, it's whatever the thing is, right? Rather than wait until you've had a really bad day and now this is the way that you were going to explode, early on when that occurs, you can say, you know, this is not an issue right now, but I see the potential for this to be an issue later on. So let's figure out how we can keep this from being an issue. Can we do that? Let's talk. Let's negotiate. Where the sponge goes, please.
Let's negotiate not leaving the trash on the counter right next to the trash can. Let's negotiate that.
Right.
Not you. No.
Right. But it's important to have that conversation. Right. If we can have it while we're feeling okay, while we can make it funny, where it's yes. not a big deal, it doesn't become an issue later.
Unless they keep doing it, and then it's an issue.
Unless they keep doing it. And then we need to have a discussion as to why aren't you honoring that discussion we had. What else is going on for you that you don't feel like respecting me in that regard?
That's big. You know, I
because
mean,
if you're going to continue to do that small thing that you know now is irritating that person or is going to irritate that person.
Yeah.
I mean, we all have a bad day. You know, we all have the, you know what, I'm just not picking up my clothes. They're staying on the floor. Screw it. But to continue to do that when you know the person is bugged by that is just mean.
Yeah.
It's just
yeah.
mean.
Yeah.
It's just disrespectful. And why would you do that to the person you supposedly love?
Yeah. That's true. It's very passive aggressive.
I'm like, so? And that means you have to have that bigger conversation of, okay, so you know that this sort of irritates me, and we've talked about it, and you said, okay, I will try to adapt my behavior in this way. And yet, that hasn't happened. So why? What else is going on? Is there something that you need me to adapt to suit your particular weirdnesses, you know, so that you're okay with it? Because we can do that. We can negotiate that. Because I don't care, you know, where the brush is on the dresser. So if you need the brush to be in this place on the dresser, I can put it there. That's not a big issue for me.
True.
And I'll do that, and you put the sponge in the sink. You know, whatever the thing is, we can trade on each other's weird OCD moments, right?
Right.
And make it work.
How does someone who has an existing monogamous relationship, how do they, and what are the percentages, the odds of them being able to open their relationship?
Obviously, we have no scientific data. there's no scientific data on that. It's so difficult because there's so many levels to what's going on there. So right. Did they intend for that relationship to be monogamous, or did it just sort of happen and they figured, well, we'll open this up later when we get to X spot?
I know. I mean, like, what I've seen tends to be like the married couple that, for whatever reason, maybe they've hit a rough patch, or maybe they haven't, or maybe just whatever. For whatever reason, they're like, let's explore this opening our marriage kind of idea. So the question is, I know that if they have a flaw in the marriage and they're trying to fix it with Polly, that's not going to help. That's not going to be good.
That won't work.
But for the situations where, you know, it's a good relationship, they love each other, and you
now
know,
this is what they want to explore.
This is kind
together.
Of they want to explore. How?
Now, if it's definitely something that they both want to explore together, as opposed to one of them saying, hey, let's do this to spice up the relationship, and the other one's terrified and going, oh my God, what is happening to what I thought was the rules of our relationship?
Right.
That's a different situation. But if they're both going, okay, we've kind of talked about this, we thought it might be a good idea, let's see about this. I might recommend trying to find a relationship therapist or counselor or sex therapist who actually deals in non-monogamy, who can give them some pointers and help walk them through what that is for them as a couple and individually. So they have a safe space to communicate about that.
Yeah,
have a neutral space.
One's going to be a little bit more...
Usually one's
never
a little bit more
level.
Aggressive than
one's
the other
more,
one.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would recommend take it really slow. No reason to rush into this. You know, if you're thinking, let's open the relationship, that doesn't mean go out and find someone and bring them home tonight. That's not the first step. Right? That's not the first step in opening your relationship. So maybe go to a party, go to an event where people are more open with their relationships, and watch other people be open with their relationships. Don't do it yourself. Don't try this at home yet. You know, just like...
Observe.
If you're interested in learning how to use a bullwhip, the first thing you should not do is go buy one.
What?
Right? Crazy. The first thing you should do is go watch someone use one in a larger atmosphere so you can even see, is that really what I want? You can watch someone, you're not even going to talk to them yet. You're not going to handle one. You're just going to watch somebody use one. In places like LA, New York, the big cities, we have the opportunities to go to classes for that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
There are also classes available within these communities that discuss non-monogamy. Right? You can go to a DS discussion group. You can go to, and even if, again, kink is not your thing, if you're not having an SM relationship, but you might get some information from people who are doing versions of poly.
Yeah, at the GRU last year, I don't remember, I think it was Princess Callie who had it was a poly discussion, just an open poly discussion. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, obviously DS was a component because it's a kinky people, but it was really interesting how, you know, she was talking about how she has a you know, somebody with her or whatever, how do other people handle these situations? It was nice to see because, again, everybody does it differently.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you can't just be like, okay, I'm going to now have the poly label on. I'm poly, you know.
Right. And so if you can go and see how other people are doing it, you can talk to other people as to what, how their relationships are, what they're doing, how they're negotiating it, and start to learn how to do that. And again, read The Ethical Slut, read some books on negotiating relationships. And again, you don't have to add the SM kink layer to all of that, but that community, those communities have a lot to offer to people who are trying to expand their horizons in relationships and sexuality. So even if the particular thing isn't what you're after, you're probably going to still get some useful information about how to communicate, how to negotiate, how to get what you want.
Yeah.
You know,
how do you know if you've gone, if you've pushed yourself a little bit too far where you wanted to, and you were on that train and you want to do this so bad with your partner, but you have your own reservations. Because I think, you know, you can push yourself a little bit, but at what point should you check in with yourself and really ask yourself, is this really for me?
All along the way, the entire train ride, you should be doing that. And you should be doing that with your partner. If you're having reservations, if you're not really sure, you should be saying, I'm still feeling vulnerable. It sounds very psychobabble, but to use those I messages as opposed to saying, you're pushing me into this. Mm-hmm. You want to say, I'm feeling vulnerable. I'm not sure about myself. I'm not sure where I am with this. Let's talk about it. You know, what is your vision? Where do you want this to go? Play out a scenario for me as to how you think this is going to happen, or what is your, you know, what's the perfect poly relationship in your head? As if that exists, but let's pretend at least
in somebody's head,
because it's good to start with that. You know, if money were no object and I could have a violet sky, this is how the world would be, and then work your way down to a more realistic way of creating that. And I don't think it's wrong if you're feeling insecure about it to say, you know what, I'm feeling a little insecure about it. Doesn't mean I'm not on the train. Doesn't mean I don't want to do this. Doesn't mean we're not going to do this. But you should know, I need a little time. I'm still feeling it out. I'm still trying. And it's perfectly valid to say, I don't know how I feel. Or to say, I'm not sure. I want to keep going. But be aware that somewhere along this ride, I might say, you know, I needed to slow down. Maybe we need to stop for a few minutes. Catch my breath, figure out where we are.
We are unfortunately way out of time.
Well, that's okay then.
We've had Emily on at the Center for Positive Sexuality, which is positivesexuality.org, talking about poly.
Yep.
I'm Insidious Muse.
And I'm Service Slut.
And, you know, like our Facebook and give us things to say nice about us on iTunes.
iTunes, yes. We like getting reviews.
Right. And hit us up if you have any follow-up questions or whatever. Or you
and
know,
they
you
can email me too.
They can email Emily, but fantastic. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Great. Thank you.
You're so awesome.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Or we're not off the air.
This is so confusing.
Hey everybody, this is Drew Marks, host of Bad Advice here.